This is the RaidersBlog.com podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Armasino. On the Skype line with me is Chris Hansen of Bleacher Report and owner of RaidersBlog.com. Another bad loss for the Raiders, Chris. We have a lot to talk about. Dennis Allen's future is very much up in the air, it would seem. They gave up 56 points. I think that's a team record. What do you make of yesterday's performance?
Well, the team, for the second game in a row, since they all, for all intents and purposes, have been eliminated from the playoff race, for the second game in a row, they fell flat on their face. You know, the offense, I guess, did fight back a little bit in the game, but they fell on their face for the second game in a row. And it took a halftime speech from Marcel Reese to really, you know, jolt some life into the offense. I don't know if the defense really ever, did life ever really jolted back into them. I mean, maybe just got a little lucky, but they, you know, they fell on their face again, and that's a concern when you're talking about leadership on this team. Leadership from the coaches, leadership from the players. Who's on this team that's going to, you know, be that leader that's going to emotionally lead them? And, you know, you need those type of leaders. And I'm not so sure the Raiders have that in their head coach or on the roster right now.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the central question. We were just talking about it. It's how much of this do you put on the coaching, and how much of it is just bad talent, you know, a bad quarterback situation? I mean, you know, the old adage is if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. Well, the Raiders have two below average quarterbacks. And so that obviously that's a bad situation. You know, I want to be fair to Allen, and I've preached patience and I continue to preach patience. You know, if you're going to argue that Allen should be fired and that he's doing a bad job, there are good arguments for that. But I don't really think the win-loss record is necessarily a good one. And I don't think he should be fired solely because they're losing. I think it's more of how they're losing, you know, these last two games, laying eggs, giving up 56 points to a Chiefs offense that isn't really thought of in that highly of regard, not touching Jamaal Charles on his, what, five touchdowns. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's definitely how they're losing. I mean, if they were playing really competitive football and they ended up only winning four games this year, you could still make a case that, hey, this team's improving. Look at what they did earlier in the season and where they were expected to be. And you can look at the stats, too, because the stats should reflect, especially, I mean, not every stat is going to win loss as a stat, maybe not. And some stats aren't going to reflect that, but some should definitely reflect an improvement. And especially when you weigh that improvement against their peers, you know, when you look at their rankings, and it should reflect, you know, if they're playing well. But the problem is I think they're going backwards, and they're inching closer and closer to being just as bad, if not worse, than they were last year. And that's where you're like, well, where's the progress? Like, where's that progress that Mark Davis wanted to see? And where's that progress really the Raider Nation expected to see, where this team was being more competitive? And they have been, technically, I think, a little bit more competitive overall this year, but it doesn't seem like they're going in the right direction right now.
No, and, you know, this is where, in these last two games, if they weren't important before, they're incredibly important now for Allen, because I think the general consensus was, you know, before the Jet game and the Chief game, that the Raiders were headed in the right direction. They were competitive in every game except for, like, two, I think Denver and Philadelphia. They were competitive in every other game. They had a few winnable games that they blew. But, I mean, again, you're a bad team with below-average quarterbacks. That's going to happen. You had the injury to Pryor. But, you know, it's a what-have-you-done-for-me-now league. And, you know, these last two games, if he finishes the season, if they give up 56 points each of the next 2 weeks, you know, in San Diego and Denver, both good offenses, really good offenses, you know, it's almost a guarantee that he's going to be fired. I mean, does he have to, is it enough even to just be competitive in these last two? Does he have to win one of these next two to keep his job? I mean, if they lose each of them 30-27, do you think that's good enough for Mark Davis?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if they lose these games,
you know, if they're close games and they end up losing at the end, I mean, is that enough?
That's a question that really only Mark Davis can answer. I mean, Mark Davis and Reggie McKenzie are going to have to make that call. But I think if they're, you know, obviously they need to play well. What that looks like, I don't necessarily know. But you know when you see it. You know what good, tough play. I mean, you might give up for example, I've seen teams give up like 30 to the Broncos, and I thought, dang, they played a good game. You know, or good three quarters, and they just had one bad quarter. But you know what I mean? Like, the Broncos have that ability to do that to teams offensively, and Chargers to some level have that ability as well, but offensively at least. Both teams don't have such great defenses. The Raiders' offense should be able to get something going. So a 30-27 loss is not outside the realm of possibility there. But, you know, when you look at it, you know, objectively, at the end of the year, and I don't think either you or me are saying right now, one way or the other, where Allen should be yes, back, or no, not back. There are two games left. But I think I said before the fourth game, when there was four games left with the Jets, that these last four games were important for Allen, that the Raiders needed to stay competitive now that they were out of the playoffs. And so far, they're kind of 0-2 on that. You know, so when you look at it objectively, going back to that, you look at it objectively, where are they, how much have they improved in key areas? You can look at some of the stats. You can look at some of it, you know, anecdotally, but has this team improved? I know McKenzie and his staff will probably look at it from the, okay, how much have these players improved on tape, and how much is that just, you know, players, are the coaches putting the players in the right position? Are they prepared? How do they look at that? I mean, because if you just look at offensive and defensive scheme, I think the Raiders have a good offensive and defensive scheme. I think they've done good in that area. And if that's all you're thinking about in terms of coaching, I think you're missing one of the biggest parts of coaching, which is being a leader, leading the locker room, being motivating players when they don't want to be motivated, when they're tired. You know, when it's the end of the game and they've got a long third down or got a goal line stand, and the Raiders have been terrible in those situations. Or at the end of the season when they've got nothing else to play for, then maybe a contract for next year. And frankly, you know, I think the veterans are like, well, I've put enough good tape. You know, if they're going to get a contract, I've got enough good tape on me, you know. And, you know, as long as I'm not the one getting burned, I don't really care if the team's not doing well, you know. Now, I'm not saying they're thinking that, but mentally there's a letdown there, and a good coach, a motivational coach, a coach that is really what separates the good coaches and the bad coaches, are the ones that have that type of leadership. That's what separates the good ones from the bad ones, not scheme, because I do think Raiders have some good schemes in place.
I wonder, that's the thing, is do we equate that, do we blame Allen? Do we blame the players? I mean, you know, in Allen's defense a little bit, and I'm not necessarily taking a side, but I'm just playing, you know, devil's advocate here. The players they have are low-salary players. They're not, you know, guys that other teams wanted. And you wonder, you know, and ideally, obviously, they're not the most talented guys, but you wonder if, you know, other teams maybe didn't like some of the mental side of some of these guys. You know, I mean, they don't have Tyvon Branch in the secondary. You know, they're playing with these, you know, Jenkins and these guys who are free agents. I wonder how much of it, and I guess it's something we probably will never know, because we don't have access to the locker room every day and, you know, stuff like that. But I wonder how much of it is on, you know, I guess it's whether you're going to delegate, how much of the blame you're going to delegate to Allen and how much to the players. Because, again, they're not great players either. It's not like this is the Seahawks defense and they're playing really poorly. You know, it's a bunch of low-salary guys that were not rejects, but, I mean, basically journeyman NFL players that they picked up in the offseason.
Yeah, I understand the talent, our talent argument, but hold on. Let's be real about something here. Raiders on defense have a lot of NFL caliber players. These are NFL caliber players. Charles Woodson is a future Hall of Famer. He should know what it's like to win. He should, and he's been honest about it. I mean, after last week, he said, "Hey, we peed down our leg. We were that bad." I mean, they made mistakes all over the field. They did it again. You know, you've got Charles Woods, you got Mike Jenkins, a former first round pick. You got Tracy Porter, a former first round pick. They've played for winning teams. They've played big games. They've played a lot of football games. You got Kevin Burnett, same thing. Nick Roach, same thing. You know, the only guys on defense that really haven't been in that situation, Pat Sims played for the Bengals. He's won a lot of games. Vance Walker, the Falcons. He's won a lot of games. Okay? Justin Hunter, the Broncos. They've won a lot of games with him there. Okay, the only guys on defense that haven't really been successful or been winning games are Lamar Houston, who's clearly not the problem on that defense. okay? He might not be the best passer, but he's not the problem. He's not the problem.
Agreed.
Okay? And then the other guys are Brandon Ross and Phillip Adams. And I thought, you know, Phillip Adams had played an okay game. He's one of the guys who took a bad angle, and Brandon Ross was a disaster. But it's not like these are not NFL players on the defense. They've got holes. They've got guys that they need to address. You know, they need a pass rush, a four-man pass rush that can get there. Because if they blitz, they're screwed if the quarterback reads it and gets it out quickly. And if they don't, they can't cover long enough because the pass rushers can't get there. But, you know, these are players that – these are not players that should be – these are not like, oh, these players are NFL-caliber players that, oh, they're going to quit because they're not – you know, they're going to quit or they're going to have a mental letdown because they're NFL-caliber players. If anything, I think they're more at risk of the kind of situation that we have right now, which is they're out of it. The veterans know it. You know, it's not like they can be blinded, and Allen can paint it in some way that it's not over. It's over. And the Raiders were eliminated before kickoff yesterday. But the veterans know this, and, you know, they can't. And I think Woodson was saying to media, he was saying, you know, I can't guard against guys mentally letting up. But we have a job to do. That's telling right there, because guys do mentally let up, and there's nothing that anybody can do about it except for the locker room, the players in that locker room, and the head coach can guard against that. And that's by creating a locker room and an environment that pretty much makes mental letdowns, not an acceptable thing. I mean, if you have a mental letdown and the coaches find out about it, you're making mistakes in practice because of mental. You shouldn't be playing anymore. And the Raiders can make all the excuses in the world. Well, we don't have the depth to bench a guy, but you do it out of principle, because at this point, that means more. And I don't think the Raiders have set that precedent. Maybe we'll see some people get benched next week. You know, that might be at least for a quarter or something. That might be at least a message sent that, hey, mentally these guys need to stay in the game, or, you know, they're not going to play and they're not going to be back here next year. And they need to send that message. And I'm not sure that message is getting through to this team. And that's my concern, because, yeah, the talent isn't there, but this is the talent that they do have. It's talent that knows better. And it shouldn't be giving up 93 points in 2 weeks to the Jets and the Chiefs. That's just pathetic.
Yeah, especially with the Chiefs at home. That's really bad.
Geno Smith, come on. I mean, Jamal Charles is a good player, at least. Geno Smith scored 37 points against the Raiders. 37.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That's like, it's more points than the Jets have scored all season. It's really bad.
It's the last two games are just, it's the most uninspired football I've seen from the Raiders in a long time. And it's worse than the Raiders. This is the way that I feel about it. The Raiders had a chance to make the playoffs by beating the San Diego Chargers 2 years ago. Remember that, the final game?
I was there.
And they laid an egg? Okay.
Yep.
They laid an egg in that game. And they had everything to play for, and they laid it again. Laid an egg. These last two games are worse than that. Way worse. Because that game, they had something to play for, and they played hard, and just they lost. They didn't play well.
And they came back late in that game. And then San Diego went on like a 90, might have been a 99-yard drive, actually. It was a super long drive. It was like in four plays, too.
Yeah,
but
the defense was horrible, right? But
really bad.
The last two games have been worse than that game. Not because you could say, well, they didn't have anything to play for. Well, so how could it be worse? Well, because they're not laying down in a game that means something. But that's precisely the point. You need to play the same, you know, you really need to play the same whether it's a big game or small game or whatever. The teams that are consistently good, they don't lay down to lesser opponents. They blow out lesser opponents. The good teams blow out lesser opponents, and they beat good opponents. And the Raiders haven't beat a winning team since 2011. And that was the Chicago Bears with Caleb Haney at quarterback because Cutler was hurt. And I have to go back and look at the one before that, but you know, the last win against a winning team before that. But the Raiders, they don't have quality wins. There's no quality wins. When we talk about quality wins, like the biggest criticism they get the Chiefs was they didn't have a quality win. Where the hell is the Raiders' last quality win? I can't even remember it. It's been so long.
No, this year they beat Jacksonville, who obviously is not good. San Diego, which I guess is an okay win. Pittsburgh, and then Houston. And we know Houston's terrible. So, again, and then, you know, they had close game with the Giants, they could have won. Close game with Tennessee, they could have won. Dallas on Thanksgiving, they could have won. And the Colts the first week. So there's been, you know, they've been in games with decent teams. Oh, the Giants aren't decent, but they've been in teams with games with decent teams, and they've had chances to win, and they just haven't done it. So, again, yeah, that is a strike against Allen that, you know, maybe, you know, even one of these wins would be nice to see. And it'd be, you know, obviously better than losing all four of them.
You want to know the last quality win before that game, that Chicago game at home?
Yeah.
It was week 5 of 2011, a 25-20 winning in Houston the day after Al Davis died. And going back to that whole emotional motivation thing, how emotional was that game?
Pretty emotional.
That was a huge emotional. They needed that emotional lift, and the Raiders, you know, the coaching staff hasn't been able to get that out of them. You know, that's their last quality win, and they didn't have any other ones in 2011. So go back to 2010, and you know there might have been one there, but you're talking, this is years ago now. This is a totally different team. So, you know, it's just. It's crazy to me that this is.
They're really bad. I mean, they have been bad.
Well, they beat the 2010 Chiefs twice. I remember that. They swept the division that year, and the Chiefs went 10-6. So.
That was the year they had Campbell. First year they had Campbell, right?
Yeah. And they also beat the Chargers twice that year, and the Chargers, I think, ended up going 9-7. So they had technically four quality wins all within the division that year. Anyhow, we're talking about some past that doesn't have anything to do with Allen and this team, but I wanted to go on to, like, talk about Allen's future a little bit in terms of. The point I made to you before was that this is a team, you can't just say Allen deserves one more year. I think I made a pretty good case to you about that. Hopefully I can do it as well for our audience. But I don't think you can just say Allen deserves one more year because of the nature of this rebuild. And I'll let you kind of start it off for us and kind of paint the picture.
Yeah, so we both have kind of agreed. This is it's almost an unprecedented kind of rebuild because that first year, last year, you can't really just ignore it. But, you know, given that they couldn't get rid of the guys they wanted to get rid of, this year, this season really is kind of like year one of the rebuild. And so if you're going to give Allen, you usually say what you give a first year coach 3 years unless it's just a complete disaster. And so if you're going to go that route with Allen, you're not just giving him confidence for next season. You're really committing to him for 2 more years. And so your argument was, you know, if this is another team and the Raiders let Dennis Allen go, are you going to try and pick him up as your head coach for the next 2 seasons if you're rebuilding? Because that's basically what the Raiders are doing, is they're kind of, you know, and it's kind of a crappy situation for Allen because it's like, well, you babysit a really crappy team, which we got rid of everybody, and now this is the first year of your rebuild, and now we're going to get rid of you, or, you know. And so it's kind of a bad situation for him, but if you're the Raiders, I mean, you have to commit to Allen for 2 more years, because next year, I think we both agree, it's detrimental that if next year's a disaster, then you fire Allen, well, then you've set your rebuild back, because, you know, coaching stability is a thing that matters, and, you know, you can bring in a better coach, and teams have gotten better at with a first, you know, bringing in a coach, you know, go get the Chiefs this year. But generally, it's not a good thing. And the Raiders probably aren't going to have as much talent as that the Chiefs have this year. And so your argument was that if the Raiders commit to Allen going forward, it has to be for 2 years, not just next year.
Yeah, I really believe that when you're talking about Mark Davis and Reggie McKenzie, when you're looking at this organization, and you're looking at this rebuild, you're going to rebuild around the schemes of your coaches, your offensive and defensive schemes, and that's the current coaches in place. And if you're going to make a change, you don't want to do it after you're going to draft players into that scheme, right? You're going to draft a quarterback that, for example, if you draft a quarterback that understands, you know, West Coast, Olsen uses West Coast language, at least. You know, every quarterback's a little bit diversified now, but uses West Coast language. You're going to draft a quarterback that kind of understands a pro style West Coast language. Maybe none of them do, but I don't know. I haven't looked at the prospects enough. But if you're going to look into that kind of quarterback, and then you fire him, and then you decide to hire a coach who wants to run more of an Air Coryell vertical offense, or maybe one of these new variants, the, you know, one word type offenses that we're seeing now. You have to start all over. You have to start up a new scheme. And you're talking about bringing in defensive players that fit Allen's scheme. If you bring in defensive players, and you're talking about spending a lot of money on those defensive players as well, because the Raiders have a lot of money to spend. So you do all of that. And then to say if Allen is a disappointment next year with given a more talented roster, and then you want to move on, you say you rebuild back a whole year. You have to look at it from an organizational standpoint. You're Mark Davis. Right now, you blew it up. You knew you were going to blow it up. But right now, you're looking at, okay, look at the future. The next 2 years, who are the men that I have entrusted to rebuild this thing? I trusted Reggie McKenzie to rebuild this thing. I know that he had to blow it up before he could rebuild it. I've already committed to him. He's my guy. He's going to rebuild this thing. He blew it up. I gave him that leeway. And by doing that, I was also giving him the leeway to rebuild it. But the coaching staff's not quite the same. The coaching staff is this team improving? And is this the right leader for the players that I'm putting on the field to get the most out of the talent that Matt McKenzie's bringing in and make sure that this is a team that's performing up to the level that it can? And you don't want an average coach either. I mean, an average coach is, I think I made the case here, average coach is kind of as good as a bad coach. You need that coach that's got that something extra. I mean, as much as people don't like it, I mean, one of the reasons I loved Jim Harbaugh, and I wanted the Raiders to go after him, even though at the time he said he wouldn't work for Al Davis and the Raiders weren't really one of his top destinations. But, you know, he's an emotional leader in the locker room. He's an emotional leader for the team. He can get his team to rise to the occasion of the situation. His team doesn't have mental letdowns. And then you look at the best coaches in the league, and you look around the league, and there's not many of these teams that are good and have those types of letdowns. I mean, you look at you look at his brother John Harbaugh. You look at Belichick. You look at all these other teams. Pete Carroll. There's sort of a unique thing that ties them all. They run different schemes. They have different situations. Everything's a little bit different. Some have good offenses. Some have good defenses. Some have both. And the kind of thing that ties them all together is they're motivational leaders. They're emotional leaders. And Allen, he might be vocal, but I don't know if he's such an emotional leader for this team. And you know, the fact that the team came out terrible, and then it took a halftime speech from Marcel Reese to kind of get the team to play better in the third quarter, that should be a concern, because that kind of should be, the coaches should have that team, the Raiders ready to play in the first half. Shouldn't have taken that from Marcel Reese to do that. And the Raiders, they lack some leaders in the locker room still, but remember, this is a locker room that Allen has had 2 years to kind of shape. And if it's not up to snuff, you're looking at an organizational standpoint, and it's just not quite as good as it needs to be after 2 years, and the leadership is not quite what it needs to be on the field. And you're looking at this, okay, maybe an outside candidate, maybe somebody, we can find somebody that we can believe in. Now, there's pros and cons to that, obviously, unknown and all that, but you have to look at this organizationally. Right now, if you stick with Allen after this year, you need to stick with him for 2 years through the rebuild, because you're saying he's the guy, basically, again, as if you were hiring him day one. Giving him 1 year, to turn it around, unless he falls totally on his face, just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, because the team's going to be so different next year because they have all the cap space, they have their full stock of picks. The team is going to be almost a different team. And so, you know, you're right. If you're going to get rid of Allen or you're not committed to him, for stability purposes, this is the time to let him go and go in fresh to the next 2 years with all this cap space and all your full stock and draft picks. But, you know, I wonder, who's out? I mean, have you looked a lot? Have you taken a look at the other coaches that are available? I mean, is there another guy you think, excuse me, is there another guy you think higher of than Allen that's out there that you would bring in?
Well, I mean, it's tough to know who the candidate pool is going to be, but, you know, I think that the NFL is such a bubble that they're so afraid of these college coaches. But oftentimes, these college coaches, I think oftentimes they're better coaches, especially ones that can maximize talent pretty well. You know, and so you look at what's out there. I mean, you know, there's the typical retread names. There's a lot of guys you probably haven't heard about either. You know, you look at someone at A&M, for example. You know, there are guys out there, bright minds out there in the college ranks especially. I mean, the Raiders did that to some extent with their coordinator, McTarver. They went to he's had some pro experience, but not at the coordinator level, and they brought him in to be their coordinator. You know, again, I think the coordinating aspect, the scheme aspect has been pretty good. So there's some bright people out there, but you got to look at who can motivate and has instant credibility with NFL players. There's some guys out there, but I think you're going to have to pay for one if you want one.
I feel like Gruden's the name I always hear the most when you talk.
Gruden, here's the thing. Gruden does want to coach again at some point. But I think, A, it's not quite the right time for him. He's not quite ready to jump back in yet. You know, he's got a pretty cushy job at ESPN. So he's not quite ready to jump back in. I think he also wants a lot of control over what goes on. He's kind of such a high profile now, he can demand that. Whether that's a good idea or not is debatable, but... And I know that Mark Davis does love John Gruden, but I feel like in the back of his mind, he's like, I'm going to give Reggie the time to build this. In the future, I mean, you know, let's be realistic. It's very rare to have a guy like a lot of stability, and you hope that you're going to get that. You hope to find a guy that you can have on the long term. But I think in the back of Mark Davis' mind, he's thinking, Gruden's not going anywhere right now. I know I can get him in the future if I give him the money and the control. But I'm going to give McKenzie this time to rebuild this thing. And you know, if he falls on his face after 5 years or so, then, okay, then maybe, you know, maybe I'll consider, you know, going back to go try to lure Gruden back. I think Gruden's also, he's definitely a pro coach. So it's going to take a team, a special team, to do it. The kind of way that I see it, Taylor, if the Raiders simultaneously don't do well under McKenzie over the next 5 years or so, and we should have some more clarity on what the hell is going on with the stadium in the next year or so as well, I think the ideal thing would be the regime change as the Raiders sort of transition to LA. I mean, that's kind of my mind, in my mind, kind of what makes sense. If you're going to make a change like that, you know, symbolic change, going into a big media market, Gruden would be the guy that you want. You know, he's the media darling. McKenzie's not really. Allen is not really. You know, so that's kind of my thought, and that's something down the road. Raider fans really should be thinking about right now because it's not on the immediate. It's really not part of the immediate radar for the Raiders or for Gruden.
I agree, and you know, when you look at Gruden, he's always been a guy who likes veterans and veteran quarterbacks, and obviously that's not where the Raiders are at right now. So, I agree.
Yeah, you have to be careful. I mean, remember, John Gruden's been down in his South Florida home analyzing tape for the last few years. He might have some new tricks and some new ideas up his sleeve, and guys also learn from their past mistakes. I mean, you look at Andy Reid this year. He's definitely learned some some from his experience in Philadelphia.
True.
You know, he's definitely done some things differently. He didn't bring all the same coaches with him. He brought in a brand new defensive coordinator that he had worked with previously. So he's made some changes to, and the coaches can learn. And that's the hopeful thing for Allen. Is, remember, he learned the hard way about hiring coaches and forcing a scheme on his players. He learned the hard way last year to do that, and he learned from that this year. And he hasn't done that this year. And then you look at, but you know, then he's made other mistakes. I mean, going into some specifics about what Allen, some of the questionable moves Allen made last week, I mean, insert prior just for a random series in the first quarter, third series of the game or whatever, and then you don't give him another opportunity. And then you say after the game, it's because McClellan got in the rhythm. Okay, that's what you believe. Okay, quarterback gets in the rhythm, don't mess it up. And you're getting prior, okay, I can kind of buy that. I don't really like that idea. I would just insert prior when the situation called for it. But okay, that's what you believe. Very next week does the exact opposite. Inserts prior in situationally, not really situational. It was a first down, so it kind of had like a new drive to start with. And you insert him into the middle of the drive, right when McGloin started to get into a rhythm, and he pretty much derails the drive. And they had a third, what, like it was like a third and 12 or something. They converted, and then Jennings ran for like 17 yards or something like that, right? So. Mm-hmm. And they got bailed out on that. I mean, that derailed the offense. And that's something they just said last week they wouldn't do. And then they, you know, they're criticized for a three-man rush, right, on third down and long. Pass rush can't get there. Quarterback's going to roll the cover so long. They're allowing too many of these third and longs. So what do? The first third and long they get, they blitz six. Sort of an overreaction, right? They don't blitz six, but they rush six. They overreact. And what happens there, okay? They allow the big screen pass touchdown. They don't even touch him. You know, they don't even have enough numbers back there to swarm tackle Jamal Charles. And then later on in the game, they go back to the three-man rush. And it works. But it was like third 19 or something. But yeah, it worked. They only allowed like 12 yards or something, and they forced the punt. But they go back to the three-man. There's no happy medium. They don't have a four, a maybe five-man rush. Or, you know, a fake like we're going to rush five and only rush four situation on a third and long. Like, it doesn't seem like they're happy medium. And it doesn't seem like they really know who they are. And those are concerns to me. You know, and the sort of weird decisions they make, like they're down 18, they've got 30 seconds left and two timeouts, and they just run it up the middle and go to the half. I mean, you don't try to do anything else. It's kind of slapping the face of the fans, like, you're down 18 points, you got 30 seconds and two touchdowns, and you have a kicker with a huge leg. You couldn't try to run two plays? I mean, if you don't make it, you don't make it, right? You don't even have to run high-risk plays. I mean, I was making the case, and I made this case on Twitter and to you, is why not run a reverse? It's just a handoff. It's a low-percentage play, but it's also a low-percentage play that when it works in a big way. And you also have the defense that's falling off deep, right? Because they're trying to prevent you from getting in the field goal range. You might get a lot of running room. And then you're running in the secondary, like Charles was yesterday. And, you know, it's hard to tackle in the secondary. It's hard to get, you know, in terms of the Raiders, they didn't even get a hand on Charles on his four receptions, not even one. I think they did get a hand on him on his rushing touchdown. But seriously, I mean, do something there. This is just coaching decisions, just like, what? It gives the perception kind of that they don't really know who they are or what they want to do. You want a coaching staff with conviction. And just, as I made a case with you earlier as well, is there's just a lot of little red flags, and I'm not ready to wave the white flag on Allen and say, hey, he needs to go, but there's two games left. And you know, and they're important games now, and they're getting more important, as you mentioned.
Yeah. And, you know, that is something, and I have no defense for Allen there. They have not built an identity. And you know, I think one of the big things for me is how they mishandled the quarterbacks. And, I mean, even last year, remember, we talked about it a lot last year with Pryor, and they weren't using him or even keeping him active. You know, they have Leinart active, which didn't really make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, it's just the idea that even if – you know, you want to have Pryor active just as a threat to the defense. I mean, they were an offense that struggled a lot last year, especially in the running game. You know, having a package for a line or for Pryor every week, it would have been, you know, ideal, or at least seems like the common sense thing to do. Now, this, you know, with this rotating McGloin Pryor situation, you know, they've mishandled it again, as you were talking about. And, you know, the easy fix, you would say, is to get a franchise quarterback. But it's not really that easy. I mean, you know, and this goes back to having an identity. You need, you know, a coaching staff. No, even if the team is lousy, they should still be doing, it should still seem like they have an idea of what they're doing. And the Raiders kind of go week to week, and they don't really build an identity. So on that, I absolutely do agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I liked a little bit better the way that they used Pryor yesterday, a little bit, when they brought him in at the goal line. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I mean, you're bringing him in a situation where you feel like you can use his athleticism. Now, it didn't necessarily work, and they ended up having to run it in, and they got it, but whatever. But I like the usage of Pryor a little bit better, and you're not necessarily disrupting the offense so much when you're just bringing him in a situation and letting him run one, maybe two plays. Now, you know, but bringing him in for a random series, the third series, and then bring him in the middle of a drive, on a first down on the middle of a drive, a first and 10, and then giving him, two plays or three plays or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And McGloin apparently was, like, ready to come back in, and he got pulled back to the sideline. Like, I'm like, what is going through their mind that makes them think that this is the way that, what kind of they keep saying evaluate, what kind of evaluation are you getting on these guys?
Right.
And that leads to the next one of the big criticisms of McKenzie and Allen so far is, do they know how to evaluate a quarterback? I mean, seriously. I mean, do they know?
Right.
Matt Flynn was horrible in Oakland, right? He didn't have an offensive line. That probably was a big factor, but he was horrible in Oakland. And then, he goes and throws. Now, it was a bad defense, granted, but is the Dallas defense that much worse than the Washington defense that he faced when he started for the Raiders? I don't think so, and he was terrible against Washington.
Right.
I guess he did have one or two good throws, but he looked awful. He got demoted after that and cut 2 weeks later. I mean, was he that much? Is this evaluation process, you know, do they know how to evaluate? You draft Tyler Wilson in the fourth round. Now, I like Tyler Wilson, but also I didn't have a chance to have access to Tyler Wilson and ask him if, you know, X's and O's questions about whether he understood protections and the mental part of the game. The Raiders did it, and they drafted him anyway. You know, and I think that's his biggest issue. And then can they get McGloin, who I think is a good undrafted guy. But, you know, he's making a lot of rookie mistakes, and he doesn't seem to be necessarily, I mean, it's early yet, but he doesn't seem to really be getting better. I don't think he's the future. I mean, he might be a future backup. But you know, that might be the extent of it.
McGloin's like the one guy that they, like, have kind of done okay on. Like, getting an undrafted guy is probably going to be, like, a decent number two for the next couple of years. I mean, I like McGloin as number two. I don't want him as a starter. But if he came back next year as the number two, I think that'd be a pretty decent situation. I mean, if McGloin had to step in for one or two games next season with a better team around him, yeah. I think I'd feel pretty okay about that.
Yeah, I think most people would probably say, okay, he could probably win a game. A couple games for us. If he had to come in, he could keep us competitive, especially if he could improve on some of his rookie things. Let me ask you this, Taylor. We don't really necessarily plan to talk about, what the heck do you do with Terrell Pryor next year?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think you kind of have to let him go. I mean, if it's Allen, it seems clear to me, at least, that Allen wants a conventional drop-back passer. I mean, even after the game, he said McGloin's the guy next week. Like, it's pretty clear they think they'd much rather have McGloin under center than Pryor. And given their performances this year, you could argue either way. I mean, I think Pryor actually has a higher completion percentage than McGloin does. If Allen's the guy, don't you kind of have to get rid of Pryor? I mean, it seems like they, even when he was playing well, they didn't really trust him. We saw it a bunch of second halves where they'd go super conservative, trying not to get turnovers. You know, I think they want the drop back passer, and they want to run that conventional kind of West Coast offense. And even, you know, when they try and get Pryor involved, as we've seen, they don't really know what to do with him.
But he's cheap, Taylor. He's cheap, and he's really athletic. So what do you do?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, do you keep him in as a backup, and then, you know, if the offense struggles, then you bring him in.
Because the problem you run here is if you bring in a new quarterback that's supposed to be the guy, like say you draft someone who comes in from day one, you know, there are Raider fans that still do really like Pryor. And if that guy struggles, then you're going to start hearing all the boos and the Pryor chants and shit. Like, you know, I feel like if they're going to bring in another quarterback and Allen's going to still be the coach and Allen clearly doesn't have much of a commitment to Pryor, I know he's cheap, but I kind of feel like he needs to be removed from this situation, you know?
Yeah, I, to be honest with you, Taylor, I mean, I've been thinking about different ideas, and the realistic thing is I don't really think you can bring Terrell Pryor back next year. Even though he's under contract, he's cheap, he's athletic, I don't think you can bring him back.
And, you know, he might have value around the league. I mean, they could get a late-round pick for him.
Yeah, I highly doubt it. Just because backup quarterbacks, you don't see trades for backup quarterbacks very often. Now, I'll say this. The one saving thing, now, after 3 years, if the coaches go and tell Pryor, listen, Terrell, you've made a lot of progress, you've done well, we appreciate all those things, and you know what? We do, but listen, we can't move forward with you at quarterback. I know that's tough to hear, but we can't move forward with you at quarterback. But we like you. We like what the effort you put in. We like everything that you do. We don't think that you're going to... Now, this is, again, it's one of those tough things here, but we don't think you're going to find much interest around the league of you playing quarterback. At most, you're going to be a decoy-type option in the league. If they have the respect of Pryor to do that, and they can do that, and they say, "Listen, Pryor, we like you enough. We do have you under contract, but we're gonna make this your call. We'd like to convert you to tight end or wide receiver or something. We'd like to convert you. We're gonna still use you in some, you know, unique packages. We're gonna try to be creative with you. We're still occasionally might let you take a snap from under center, but we'd like to convert you to another position. Put your athleticism to good use." And because we think that is going to ultimately benefit you. It's your call. And this is the thing. You can do this with players under contract. Your agent can go look around the league and see what kind of interest you have. You know, we're going to give your agent permission to talk with other teams. See what kind of interest there is about having you play quarterback elsewhere. Okay? And if you have interest playing quarterback, we'll let you go. You know, if they have interest. But if they don't, let us have a chance to convert you to another position because we like your athleticism. Then maybe, and that's the thing, if the Raiders have really built up a good enough relationship with Pryor, they might be able to get away with something like that. And you know what? I think that is the honest, that's being honest with your player, an honest evaluation at the end of the season, is if you don't think you can be a quarterback in the league for 3 years now, he's not going to end up being a starter in this league. You know, he's motivated. He's going to want to prove me wrong. I get that. But also, you can also prove me right and come in and work hard to confirm positions and become something great there. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I think if they bring in another quarterback and you know, do you, especially if it's one of those, like if they just spend a top three pick on one, do you really want to bring Pryor back? That's tough, and he's under contract.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you know, you don't think there's some team that would give up a 6th or 7th round pick for him?
Not unless he would agree to convert positions.
What about Carolina? Someone like that, you know, similar, you would think, to Newton. You can come in if Newton gets hurt and run similarly, you know, a lot of that read option kind of stuff. You don't even think they'd think about pitching a 7th round pick for him?
What it comes down to, Taylor, to me, is how good is he as a passer?
True. That's the problem. He's not.
To be honest with you, there's a lot of good athletes in the league. You can have a lot of guys, you know, run that kind of stuff. That gives the player something extra, you know, and it makes them dangerous and stuff. But to say that, because Cam Newton's similar, that would make sense. I don't know if that necessarily makes sense for Carolina because he's not near the passer that Cam Newton is. So it's like, he's a similar runner, but he can't do the passing part. Where you could have a backup, you could have a regular backup who, oh, he can do the passing part, just doesn't have the running part. In this league, which one is the one that you want to have?
True.
It's the passing part.
True.
You want the passing part. And so that's why backup quarterbacks, you don't see many of these like running type quarterbacks just stashed as a backup quarterback. And that's also why the Raiders, you know, they prefer a pocket passer. You know, it's nice to have that extra running ability and escapability and moving around in the pocket, but you still have to be a good quarterback. I mean, look at Russell Wilson. Okay?
Yeah.
He's not a running quarterback. He runs. He extends plays. He moves around in the pocket. He makes up for his lack of height that way. He's not really a running quarterback, and he's a passer. He's a good passer.
Right.
And that's what separates, you know, and Cam Newton, you know, isn't just a runner either. He's got that element to his game, but he's still a pretty good passer as well. So, you know, there's a lot of hope for Pryor early in the season, and, you know, you'd like to see what he can do behind a good offensive line. But, again, I've said this over and over. You can evaluate a quarterback independent of the talent around him. You look at, yeah, the offensive line was an issue. The receivers were an issue. But where the ball's in, was he placing the balls in the right place? Was he making the right reads? All of those things that go into being a quarterback, a good quarterback, was he doing those things? And the answer, you know, especially towards the end there, was no, he wasn't.
You know, McGloin, I think, has looked better as a thrower than Pryor ever did. And even, and he hasn't even played all that well. But, I mean, we've seen McGloin throw guys open, and it's like, whoa, we haven't seen this in a while, you know, because Pryor never did that. And, if you looked at the passing game with Pryor, it was a lot of short stuff. It was simple throws. McGloin, he's turned the ball over a little bit now, but he's been making plays down the field, getting the ball to Holmes where he can catch the ball. I mean, McGloin, you know, is probably a decent backup at the best, and he's been infinitely better, I think, as a thrower than Pryor ever was.
Yeah, you look at the ball placement. I mean, you know, Pryor was hitting guys, and don't get me wrong, he was hitting guys, but it was like, you know, he had scrambled for 10 seconds back there, and the you know, receivers were running around, breaking off their routes, trying to find an open spot so Pryor could hit him. You know, you didn't see that in timing, anticipation. You didn't see that accuracy, the back shoulder throws, you know, like the touchdown to Rivera, where he let Rivera come back to it, you know, and get past, get past the, and then the kind of jump ball, if you will, to Andre Holmes. I mean, it's a good play by Holmes, but it's also a good throw by McGloin to be right where it needs to be. Now, McGloin's had some serious issues losing track of underneath defenders. And that's a concern. And then, you know, obviously, under pressure, he's kind of folded like a tent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, under pressure, even when he gets time, he starts to panic back there, and he's made some bad throws. But you can coach some of that, and that's the thing. It's like, some people's like, well, that's coachable. Some of it is, but in order to, like, you know, when you're losing underneath defenders and you don't see them, and then you kind of panic under pressure, the only thing you can really teach a quarterback to do is throw it away. And with McGloin, some of his best plays are also kind of when he's gunslinging, you know? It's kind of like, I'll say it's kind of like Cutler. If you limit him too much, you don't get the good part of their game. And that's part of the problem is if you try to make them play conservative, they oftentimes don't get the pros and cons because the quarterbacks are just either that way or they're not. You know, it's kind of you're either an efficient type of guy or you're a gunslinger. And there's very few guys in this league, you know, the top maybe four or five quarterbacks in this league are both, you know, can do both and make those amazing plays while simultaneously not taking too much risk. They know what, you know, Tom Brady's, Peyton Manning's, Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's not that many of those guys that can do both. So you have to, what kind of quarterback are they? And then you just have to kind of manage them properly. You know, you have to try to get an efficient player to know to take a risk occasionally, and you have to try to get a gunslinger to know when not to take a risk. But you know, you still have to let him take those risks at that time. So there's different types of quarterback, and I think McGloin's sort of that quarterback that isn't all that talented, but he's kind of that gunslinger type. And it's coachable, but how coachable? I'm not convinced that it's something that can be totally corrected without also limiting, you know, the upside. And McGloin, considering, you know, undrafted, he kind of needs all that upside that he can get.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree, and it'll be interesting. You know, they do need a quarterback, and you know, circling this all back to Allen. You know, if you're Dennis Allen, you have to feel, I don't know, I feel conflicted about this, because for him, it's like,
yeah, it sucks.
It sucks. It's a really shitty situation.
No doubt.
And even, you know, he may not get another job. Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, if this is your one head coaching job, you know, that's pretty shitty. I can't think of many that were, like, a worse situation than this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's really interesting to me, and I've thought about this, I haven't really vocalized it yet, but one thing's really interesting, we talked about Allen's situation and coming in. So, remember, Reggie McKenzie wanted to interview both Mike McCoy, the offensive coordinator in Denver at the time, and now head coach of the Chargers, and Dennis Allen. And McCoy declined the interview. Only Allen interviewed. Allen ended up getting the job. And Allen and McCoy are pretty tight, from my understanding. The family's vacationing together this past offseason. And now McCoy, you know, a year later, McCoy got the job in San Diego. And you know, you look at that situation, you're like, did McCoy not interview for the job so that Dennis Allen would have a better chance at making it? Or did Mike McCoy decide, that's not where I want to be? And Allen said, this might be my only chance. You know, what was going on there between those two guys? Because I'm sure they talked about it. If they're buddies, I'm sure they've talked about it. Very interesting thing. And another thing I kind of brought up on Twitter last night is, like, Dennis Allen plays the Broncos and the Chargers, which is his former head coach, a guy that he's still pretty good relationship with, John Fox and Mike McCoy. Are they going to run up the score? Say they really outplay the Raiders. Are they going to run up the score and make Allen look bad? Or are they going to kind of ease off so that way Allen, you know, because it's their buddy? How do they play that? You know, do they really stomp the Raiders into the ground if the Raiders are playing like they have the past 2 weeks? Or do they really let off the gas and kind of, you know... Yeah, I realize they can't really let off the gas because they're both still playing for something. But, I mean, if you get a big lead, you play things differently. It's just going to be interesting to see how they come out and, you know... And you know how Dennis Allen responds... These last two games, you got to think that's frustrating for Allen too. I mean, I think he's got to know what's going on here.
Oh, of course.
He probably hopes that he's safe, but I'm sure he hasn't been given any assurances. I'm pretty sure about that. And he knows that, you know, two bad losses like that late in the season in your second season, and the team isn't doing well, regardless of how much talent is on the roster or not.
Well, how about three in a row to division teams? It's not just like they're losing any other teams. I mean, these are division rivals, you know.
The Chiefs, yeah. At home, that hurts.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to the last Denver game. When they got up pretty big, didn't they take the foot off the gas a little bit?
Oh, yeah, they did. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
They for sure did.
Because it's conceivable in Week 17, Denver won't be really playing for... A ton. If they're up big at halftime, maybe they even pull Manning. I don't know.
If they're not playing for anything and they're up big, oh yeah, they'll pull Manning. No doubt about that.
Hell, Manning probably won't even play.
Well, if they're playing for nothing, I think he'll play because Manning's so competitive. But you know, he'll come in, they'll run some vanilla stuff, he'll play for a half. Manning is good about protecting himself, so they don't really have anything to worry about there. You know, he'll come in and play for a half and he'll play as long as they need him to play. But if they don't have anything to play for, I bet he plays only a half. If they don't have anything to play for. Now, if they're playing for seeding, he'll probably play the whole game.
So
the scenario right now is the Broncos are tied with the Chiefs.
Right.
Broncos are tied with the Chiefs. And if they lose a game and the Chiefs win out, then the Chiefs would get the division.
Yeah.
But the Chiefs play the Colts this week. So if the Chiefs were to lose to the Colts this week, the Broncos could lose a game even conceivably, and they would still win the division. And since the Patriots lost, they're now a game up on them as well. And right. The Patriots play the Ravens, and the Ravens need to win. So there's a lot of different scenarios here where this could play out. But it's certainly possible that the Broncos are playing for nothing. It's also possible they're playing for a number one seed. It's also possible they're playing for the division. So there's really three possibilities right now. We won't really know, but we should have better clarity after this week on what's going to happen.
Gee, that Kansas City-Indianapolis game. Talk about two teams that, like, you can't really figure them out, you know? I mean, the Chiefs, Chiefs at least obviously are better. At least it looks like they're better. But the Colts, I can't figure out. I thought they might play a close game this week. And I thought, you know, I kind of like them against Cincy because I'm an idiot. And I can't figure the Colts out week to week. Some weeks they look amazing and some weeks they're terrible. And then the Chiefs, you know, it's kind of the same way in terms of, like, do people think, you know, are they good? Are they maybe not as good? Like, you know, they lost those three games in a row, but now they beat up on these two bad teams. Two teams that are just really hard to figure out.
Yeah, the Chiefs are interesting because they beat up on teams with bad offenses, and they did it with defense, right?
Right.
And then they played some teams with good offenses, and they struggled more. They lost three straight. And then they played two teams with bad defenses, and they beat up on them offensively. So that might tell you that, hey, they might be better than we think. They know how to, they can do offensive things, they can do special teams, they can play defense. They can do a lot, they're kind of a well-rounded team, but maybe not great in any particular area. Maybe not fantastic in any one area, so that's kind of interesting. And the Colts are somewhat the same. Their offense sometimes looks brilliant when Andrew Luck is trusted to do everything. They don't play super conservative.
And when Trent Richardson's not on the field.
Right. And then other times they look like they play conservative and they're using Trent Richardson and they're trying to run too much and it just doesn't work for them. And then their defense, I think it's been average, but at times it's been playing well. And I think they've been sort of hidden by the offense a little bit. When the offense is going well, I think it's saved the defense. For example, when the defense isn't playing well, I think that forces the offense to open it up and play. So I think the Colts are a little bit. They're obviously a seriously flawed team, but they're a team that also, with Andrew Luck, is going to have a chance to. You have a chance when you have a quarterback to make some noise. You have a game changer. It's like when you have Adrian Peterson, you have a chance because he's a game changer. When you have, and that might be hope for the Chiefs yet going to the playoffs as much as that probably, Raiders fans probably don't like Evans. They have a game changer in Charles, and he's been lights out for like 4 weeks now. So, the good teams, and that's one of the other things, like good coaches, good teams, should they be getting stronger at this time of year? I mean, look at Gus Bradley in Jacksonville. That team was in similar situation as the Raiders, right? Maybe even worse. Arguably worse than the Raiders. And they seem to be getting better as the season goes along in their first year. They're getting stronger. In fact, in theory, they could win one of these last games and ruin their playoff or their draft position, but they're playing better football now. More inspired football than they were. And that's a team that doesn't have a lot of talent. That team has an even worse quarterback situation than the Raiders did. When you talk about Chad Henne as the starting quarterback, it's not very good. If you look at these other... What other teams are out of it right now, Taylor?
Cleveland's been playing... Minnesota. Minnesota's been playing really tough.
Yeah. Cleveland, Minnesota, they're both been playing pretty tough games. Cleveland
lost to the Patriots by a point last week. They were in a game with Chicago, and a game Chicago needed to win. Cleveland's been playing tough. They're, I think, I'm looking at the AFC. I think they're the best bad team in the AFC.
Cleveland.
Yeah. Like, best of the really bad teams.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Do you throw Tennessee in that group?
Tennessee, I think Tennessee's a tough team.
They are. And the thing is, if the Walker doesn't get hurt, their season's different. So I don't know whether...
I think, to be honest with you, I think if you're looking at the 5-win and below level, which includes Buffalo, Tennessee, Cleveland, Jacksonville, Oakland, and Houston, I think the best team there is the Titans.
Yeah. And then I would go Cleveland.
Cleveland or Buffalo is sort of a toss-up between those two teams. Hmm. Actually, you might throw the Jags in there. They played a pretty tough schedule.
Hmm.
The only team that you can in the AFC that you can be like, wow, they're just clearly worse than everybody is Houston.
Yeah.
You know?
They're really bad. They got killed this week. But yeah, you know, and Gus Bradley, I like Gus Bradley. I think he's a good coach.
He's one of those guys that I believe in him as an emotional leader. Mm. You know what I mean? He was an emotional guy in Seattle.
Right.
You look at what teams, realistically, regardless of draft order, what teams are actually worse than the Raiders right now?
Houston, Washington.
Maybe the Washington beat the Raiders. Remember?
Yeah, but that was Flynn. I don't know. I still think the Raiders. If they played again this week, I think the Raiders would probably win. Maybe
because of the disaster that they have going on there, but that's pretty close. But okay, I'll give you Washington. They have worse record. Okay, so Washington and Houston.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what the Raiders would be picking third right now. That's two teams. I mean, I think you could make an argument. They beat Jacksonville, but I think Jacksonville's playing better than they are right now.
Yeah, I agree. So you're talking about the Raiders. I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. And that's one thing we need to underscore here. We shouldn't be surprised how bad the Raiders are. But and I think Mark Davis was talking about this when he talked with Kyle Kelvin last week, is when you see progress, it's hard to have patience. But it's also not progress if it's only for a period of time.
True.
You know, it's only for a short period of time. That's not progress. That's just, you know, that's a temporary,
small sample size.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, for what it's worth, you know, Football Outsiders, they keep the DVOA metric, which I really like, and the Raiders have been, like, I think, 31st in DVOA for most of the season. And so...
Okay, who did the Raiders beat? Let's go back to that.
Right, they beat the Jags.
they beat the Jags in Houston. Okay, two teams that are arguably worse than them.
And then they caught Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was playing really poorly, if I remember correctly.
Yes, Pittsburgh was playing really poorly. Pittsburgh's not really that great of a team, either.
Right, but then Pittsburgh had, like, a little uptick. But the Raiders caught him before that.
They beat him by 3 at home, coming off the bye week.
To be fair, they were up, what, 21-0 in that game at halftime?
Okay, yeah.
But I know it's still a 3-point win, but I'm, yeah.
Yeah. They won by 3. That's a bottom line. I mean, they let them get back in the game. They won by 3 at home, coming off the bye week. They had 2 weeks to prepare for that game.
Right.
Okay. The only other game the Raiders won was at home, and the only road one they have is Houston, at home against San Diego.
At, like, 2 in the morning.
At 2 in the morning, yeah. That was the best win that they've had this season. And San Diego's a flawed team. They have a bad defense.
Horrible defense.
And for whatever reason, Phillip Rivers was not how he's been the rest season in that game. That's his worst game of the year. I watched him all, trust me. It's by far his worst game of the year. And I wonder how much Allen's knowledge of McCoy, familiarity with what McCoy likes, played into that game and game planning for that game. Because they held the Chargers to only 17 points.
Hmm.
You know, I'm just curious, as you know, especially the Raiders know Rivers, first of all. They know the Chargers because they played him twice last year. And, you know, the the preparation that they had for that game was, I think, probably, maybe they had the most insight into the game plan and their best game plan for that game. And to their credit, they did. But if you look at those wins, you're like, and Chargers, even Chargers now, I don't think Chargers are very, I don't think they're a great team. I think they're a seriously flawed team. But you look at them, and you're like, dang, there's not really any good wins on that.
No.
On that schedule, is there? Uh-uh. I mean, no games against a winning team. Maybe the Chargers will get there.
And again, and they've had games where they conceivably should have won, and they've blown.
Yeah. And but that's kind of what bad teams do, don't they?
Right. No, I'm not arguing that they're a bad team. Yeah. I'm saying, my point in bringing up the DVOA is almost it's like they might have been playing over their heads, being like, what, 4-8 or 4-9, and then these last 2 weeks are like, oh, this is the real Raiders, and like for some weird reason they were playing over their heads. I don't know. It was something I thought about the other day.
I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, they lost to Tennessee, who's not very good. They lost to New York, who's not very good. They lost to those teams by, what, like 4 points each?
Yes.
They lost to Dallas, who is not very good. You know, you lost to the Jets, that are not very good. And they weren't, you know, for the most part, they weren't blowouts. I mean, the Jets game was 10 points, and it wasn't a very good game. But, you know, you lost Denver, okay, that's an understandable loss. You lost to the Chiefs in Kansas City. Chiefs were playing well. That's understandable, given the talent level of this team, to lose those games. Maybe the most encouraging game was the first one, week one, Indianapolis.
Yeah.
You start to look, as we do these reviews, I mean, we start to look at the who'd they beat? You're like, oh, in the moment, you're like, oh, they got a good win, you know, they played well. And then you're like, okay, who was it against? Because that does matter. It does matter who you play. And a win against Houston, that's really not a big deal.
And it was a close win, too. It wasn't even, like, a decisive victory. And Houston's pretty clearly the worst team in the league.
Yeah, and then you beat Steelers at home, coming up for bye week, and the Steelers aren't that great. Okay. And the Steelers are also traveling poorly to the West Coast, by the way.
They beat Pittsburgh last year, too.
Yeah, exactly. And they beat Pittsburgh in Oakland, like, 4 out of the last 5 times or something.
They always play well against Pittsburgh. I think there was, like, one game I remember a couple years ago they didn't play well. But then they had one when Gradkowski was the quarterback. Yep. That was a really good game that they pulled out. So they always played somewhat well against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so, I mean, when we go through these games as we did, you start to say, maybe the Raiders really aren't as good as their record would seem to indicate.
And then the question is that a testament to Allen? Or is that a mark against Allen? I kind of think it's the former, because they were supposed to be the worst team in the league this year, them and Jacksonville, and
is it? I mean, you're beating bad teams that are clearly worse than you. Is that really a mark of?
Anything? It's better than losing to them.
Yeah, but you're not winning any. You don't have a signature win. I guess that's the. You don't have a win on the loss on the schedule. You're like, the point to that one is like, look at what we did. Like, we got that win. We got a hard-fought win. We beat a good team. Like, they don't have any of those.
True, but again, you could argue they're supposed to be worse. See, I guess that's where the argument is. It's like, how bad is, like, you know, if they were...
Let me ask you, is beating good teams, even a bad team, is beating a bad team, is a bad team beating a bad team impressive? Just without going into levels of how bad they are, bad team? I don't think so. I don't think beating, regardless of, and this is where you have to go beyond the wins. Like I said, you can't really evaluate based on the wins. I'm not evaluating Allen based on the wins. The Raiders could have 2 wins right now. I'm evaluating on, you know, with the way the Raiders have played. I mean, you know that Pro Football Rankings gives they do something called the simple rating system. Basically, they look at margin of victory, so that's kind of has points built in, but margin
right.
of victory.
Right.
And strength of schedule to get like a simple, they do like a simple rating system. It's simple. And it doesn't look beyond anything or anything, but it does sort of, how well did you play in the games that you won? And who did you play against? And it kind of gives you an idea of, okay, what's the relative strength of these teams, regardless of record? And you go through, and the Raiders are, Raiders are the fourth worst team in the league, which right now I think they would probably end up having the fourth pick. After the two games are played, I know right now they have the third pick, but strength of schedule-wise, I'm guessing they're going to end up with the fourth. Depending on how things go, you never know, but chances are they'll end up with the fourth, I believe, right now, and the odds are that way. So I guess that puts them right in line with where they're in, but now it doesn't, you know, the teams that are below them are Jacksonville, Washington, and the Jets. Not Houston. Houston is just above the Raiders because of who they play.
I'm looking at DVOA.
Yeah.
And going into this week, obviously it hasn't been updated because of the Monday night game, but they were second worst, and their estimated wins were 2.2.
Right.
So if I'm on Allen's side here, which I'm not saying I am, I'm just playing devil's advocate, I don't know. I think that reflects somewhat well on the coach. They have double that, basically.
To be able to get two more wins out of...
A two-win team. To get four wins out of a two-win team. I know it's like we're talking about, you know, it's depressing, but I wonder, you know, because I feel like most people coming into the year are like, that's an expansion. I mean, what did Evan Silva said? It was the worst, like the expansion roster. Like, you know, getting double your estimated wins, even if it's four, I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, you could be right. And I'm not disputing the talent being an issue. I think it's
just a matter of how much of an issue it is and how much is coaching.
Well, how much of... Okay, so let's real quick, while we wrap this up, I want to just one real quick pose. Go back to the game last week. And to some extent, the Jets game. What issues were the Raiders having that were talent issues?
Well, the quarterback was shitty.
Yeah, but was his problem talent? I mean, after that.
Why he threw four picks? McGoin threw four picks last week. It was four, right?
But were they talent picks? Was it a talent issue? Or was it a mental issue?
I'd have to go back and watch it on film.
How much of it was preparedness? Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like any time a quarterback throws four picks, I feel like you kind of have to give it that to the. I feel like you can't put that on the coach as much. Because you're not coaching a guy to throw a pick. Like when Cutler threw those two picks yesterday, I wouldn't have put those on Trestman.
Well, you prepare the quarterback to play, and then they go out there and play. But let me ask you this, okay? In this situation, when you've got two quarterbacks that you're trying to evaluate, and one of the quarterbacks goes out there and he stinks it up and he throws a couple picks, isn't it on the coaches to say, let's go with a different quarterback?
I am with you on that. They left McGoin in way too long yesterday. I am with you on that.
And you know what? To some level, it paid off for them. I mean, he did play better in the third quarter, but was that a good coaching decision?
No. And we've talked. Like I'll readily admit that Allen and his staff have routinely mismanaged the quarterback situations, especially when Pryor's been.
And that's the most important position, Taylor. I'm just saying. But
no, I agree with you on that. No, absolutely. That's. By far, I think my biggest criticism of Allen is...
But look at the defense. The defense with the hand pick, with all the veterans. If there's any talent on the team, it's on the defensive side. And and the defense, yeah, they have short fields. Yeah, I get all that. But was the problems that they had talent-wise? Was it a talent issue?
Look at the first screen pass to Charles.
The wheel route, okay, I think the wheel route was a talent issue.
Yeah,
The wheel route, there was a great call by the Chiefs. It was third and one. They ran a wheel route, it was third and one, and they brought in a heavy set. So they guaranteed the Raiders would be in base deep. And then they ran that wheel route, which guaranteed linebacker on Charles, which was Miles Burris.
which is like Miles, you or me guarding him, so yeah.
Miles just doesn't have that. He doesn't have the speed. He, by 20 yards downfield, he was behind by five. He just didn't have the speed to keep him. That was a talent issue. So there's one. I'm not saying that there is none of them are, but I'm just saying how many of them were talented.
Well, if I remember correctly, on the first screen pass, and he would have gotten big yards anyways, but didn't they, like, trip over themselves at the sideline?
Three guys got blocked by one guy. They ran themselves right into a block, three guys.
See, that seems like a talent issue. Like, I'm pretty sure the coaches aren't saying all three of you run into the blocker, you know? And I'm not saying they weren't in bad position to begin with, but I think you could probably argue both ways there.
Yeah, maybe it's a talent issue. I mean, I'm willing to accept that there's... I'm bringing up these issues because the Raiders need to make the right call, and that's why I'm bringing up...
Yeah, we need two more weeks before we'll have a better answer in 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there was a blown cover. There was Donny Avery got behind coverage on one, like, 36-yard pass or whatever. It was a blown coverage assignment. The screen passes, it's tough. I mean, is that talent? Because they do have to have a certain level of talent to get around blockers and then go get that guy. But I find it hard to believe that the players on that defense don't have enough talent to stop a simple screen pass.
True. Yeah.
And if that's the case, why haven't teams been doing that all season?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Well, it'll be interesting. I guarantee you San Diego will throw one early in the game.
San Diego loves screens to Danny Woodhead, I'll tell you that much.
Right, yeah.
They're going to run them.
If they run a screen that goes for a touchdown on the second play of this game, I'll guarantee you, I'll concede this to you.
If they run a screen that goes for a touchdown at all, then after this week, I might give it to you just because they're clearly going to harp on it. The coaches are clearly going to harp on it, and they're not going to be able to solve it.
Yeah.
Which says maybe it's a talent, a talent problem. But
it'll be interesting or painful. Probably and.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've said this last week. The reason I chose I predict the Raiders would win that game was because I like Allen. I want him to get that win that says so we can all stop talking about his job and say, okay, what do the Raiders have to do to be good next year? That's what I want. That's what I prefer because I do like Allen. I like his schemes. I think he's a good defensive coordinator.
I like him too.
And I'm not even sure about him as a leader. The Redlands say the right things, but I see so much evidence both ways that it's conflicting right now. And I'm not going to make a decision before I have to, and I don't think the Raiders are going to make a decision before they have to make a decision.
Yeah. No, we'll see how these last two games go, and then...
You can't blind yourself to not taking all the evidence in. Has the team improved? What's the team doing right now? Is the team playing hard now? How much is talent? You have to take all those factors into account, and then make a decision on Allen, and make a decision on what's best for this franchise moving forward over the next 2 years. If we get... We get good results next 2 weeks, even in the losses. We get harder play, better quality play. Then I'd say even then you have to keep Allen. I think I'd be a little scared, but I think you still have to keep him.
Yeah, I agree. Real quick before we get out of here, how are your picks this week?
Horrible.
I had maybe the worst week I've had too in my bets. It was awful.
Depending on the outcome of tonight, I think I might have of all the expert picks, I might have end up with the worst week.
Yeah, I was 1-4 at my bets this week, and the one was San Diego, so I went 0-4 yesterday. It was over.
I have picked 6 games correctly, and I have Baltimore tonight. If Detroit wins, I will have 6 overall, and I think maybe Locke and Fora will be worse than me, or will I be tied with Locke and Fora? Just a horrible week.
Games didn't make any fucking sense. Like, the Saints?
Yeah, that was a lot of weird.
I mean, I bet on the Saints and the Eagles. Like, I just had one of those weeks where it's like, oh, the two most bizarre games of the week just happen to be the ones you bet on, you know? And just like, oh.
Okay, so there, I'm going to tell you how bad this is. So there are seven guys that have six wins right now. And only me and Locke and Fora have Baltimore. So if Detroit wins, I will be, with me and Jason Locke and Fora will be the worst experts picking this week of any expert, of 90 experts. Will be the worst. So I had a horrible week. Now, I've had a pretty good season, so I don't want to beat myself up too much, but I had a horrible week. I knew I took some risks this week, and I knew I took some risks with the Raiders. I thought about taking San Diego, too, just to make it a complete risky week. Buffalo got over Jacksonville. That kind of screwed me up.
I bet on Jacksonville because I'm an idiot.
Philadelphia was a shocker to me.
Yes. I think that was the biggest shocker of the day.
The Saints. I also picked Tennessee to beat Arizona. I didn't trust Carson Palmer against that secondary. I got close on that one, but I didn't win. I had Cincinnati over Pittsburgh. I actually thought about going the other way on that one, but I didn't. But you know, you think about it, and sometimes you don't pull the trigger. But anyway, I took some risks this week. I knew I was going to take some risks, and I got burned this week. Too bad, because, you know, had I picked status quo, I probably would have been one of the best. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Status quo meaning the only games, if I had gone with not my, oh, this is closer than I think, and go, in other words, go with the favorite slash a couple, you know, there would be, I would have missed Philadelphia and New Orleans. And Cincinnati, maybe, but I may have gone with Pittsburgh just because they were playing at home and stuff. So
the one that really pissed me off yesterday was I got backdoored by the Jets.
Yeah, that sucks.
I had the Panthers minus 11, and of course the Jets backdoored me and lost by 10. So that was.
Sucks.
Yeah, it was a bad week. I went 1-4, with the only win being the Chargers, so.
I'll say this week is, I'm in good company at the bottom. There's a lot of the good pickers that are at the bottom this week, and a lot of the guys that aren't very good on the season are doing good. So I don't feel so bad.
It was just a weird week. I mean, they all feel weird, but this one especially. I think.
The best pickers this, well, Jaworski did good again, so he's going to be up near the top. But I think the best. CBS prediction machine has been the best this season, and they only got eight right. They've only got eight, and they have Detroit tonight. But it only got eight right, and it's in 43rd position. 43rd position. So that's not very good. A lot of the guys that pick, Ty Schalter, who also writes from Bleacher Report, he's been a really good picker this year. He's down with me. He's only got six, but he's got Detroit, and I have Baltimore. So one of us will be the lowest Bleacher Report expert, and the other one will be a little bit better. If that shakes out like that. So it's been an ugly week for us. Andrea Hanks, also Bleacher Report, she's also been really good this season on picking. She only has seven. It's just been a bad week. It's been a bad week for some of the best pickers, and the bad pickers seem to be doing good this week, so go figure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will talk to you next week.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. We will talk next week. Hopefully you enjoyed getting to see you early in the week. Enjoy it.
Yes. All right. Well, yeah, absolutely. See you, Chris.
See you.